You are Locked On Packers, your daily Green Bay Packers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
R-E-L-A-X. Relax. We're going to be okay.
It is time.
I feel like we can run the table. We're going to do it.
You are Locked On Packers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am Peter Bukowski, and I cover the Packers for SB Nation. I cover the NFL around the internet, and you can follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. You can like us on Facebook. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Play. Wherever you find podcasts, you will find Locked On Packers, the number one Packers podcast in the state of Wisconsin, and the show for fans who know what happened. They want to know why and how. I am also today on Locked On NFL. If you are not a Locked On NFL subscriber, go check that out. I'm on the show today. Unfortunately, I don't think your listens are going to benefit me monetarily, but that's not what it's all about. They needed some help with the hosts, as our normal host Matt Williamson is taking a little bit of a vacation, a deserved vacation. He puts in a lot of work on that show, and I was happy to step in and help him out there. Andy Herman from Cheesehead TV and the Packaday podcast is on the show today to talk about the upgrades the Packers have made in the offseason. Andy is a religious, I would say, film watcher. And that's sort of his brand. He almost renamed his Twitter handle Grinding the Tape or some facsimile of that. And so he does his own grading scale, and he notes that there are a lot of Packer players who were bad last year, according to his grades. And by the way, they were still Packers when he did those grades, and they're being replaced by players who he studied and found that they're in fact good, or at least solid. And this is something that I don't think gets discussed enough. Solid players win football games. And we're going to talk about that with Andy, about these upgrades and just the massive gap in some cases of the upgrades that were made. And I don't think you have to think that Za'Darius Smith is J.J. Watt to think that he can be a massive upgrade. I don't think you have to think Adrian Amos is the second coming of Earl Thomas to believe that he could be a massive upgrade. Speaking of upgrades, though, I want to start today's show with a story that came out in which Mark Murphy explicitly confirmed the report. And this is something that I have been talking about basically since the Khalil Mack trade happened. There I go, basically again. Why do I keep saying that? Literally, this is literally, that the Raiders chose to deal with the Bears because of the fact that Oakland believed the Bears would finish with a worse record. Now, of course, they turned out to be wrong about that. And it's also true that Chicago did not truly give up two firsts. They gave up a first in this draft and a first in next draft. But that next draft comes with a pick swap in the second round. If the Bears are good and the Raiders are bad, that might not be a huge drop-off. So that's part of the equation here. Could the Packers have gotten a deal done? Would they have been willing to give up both of the Saints picks? And could that have been enough? Would you trade both of those picks for Khalil Mack? I think you probably would, but remember the money that comes along with that and all of the factors there. But this is confirmation now that Green Bay never really had the opportunity. I know Packer fans are, they have somewhat short memories about this, but I remember seeing early in the offseason all of this Brian Gutekunst stuff, because he hadn't had this whole hog offseason yet where it's, yeah, well, Brian Gutekunst is just Ted Thompson 2.0 and he didn't make the Khalil Mack trade and the Bears won the division because of it. And then, the people who are saying that have to be quiet after Brian Gutekunst has the offseason that he did, go all in on two pass rushers, and then you trade up for the safety, you get Adrian Amos, you sign Billy Turner, who, is he going to be a world beater? No. Is he going to be a significant upgrade over Byron Bell, who was legitimately one of the 3 to 5 worst preferred starters in the league last year? Yeah, he is. In all likelihood, he is, even if he's just like replacement level
even if he is a zero on the grade sheet and he's not a net negative, that will be a pretty big upgrade over what Green Bay had. But so this Khalil Mack thing, I just want us to put it to bed. And of course, there is the cynic who will say, well, of course, Mark Murphy would say that. But it was reported. And this was, from, by the way, from Jets media, from New York media, because the Jets apparently were willing to put two firsts on the table, never got the opportunity to because people thought the Bears would be bad. And the Bears turned out with Khalil Mack to be a lot better than even teams in the league thought they would be, or at least better than the Raiders thought they would be, better than John Gruden thought they would be. And so it is not on Brian Gutekunst to have not made this trade. There are still Packer fans making the argument about, oh, well, he should have put two firsts on the table. Even if he had, it's not clear that Green Bay would have been in the mix. It sounds like, based on what Mark Murphy has said, that Oakland made up their mind about Chicago, that they were the team that Oakland targeted because they felt like the Bears were not ready to be a 12-win team, and Green Bay was, especially with Khalil Mack. You know, I think you can certainly make a case that even with Aaron Rodgers hurt last year and even with the offensive mess, if Khalil Mack is on the Packers last year, they probably win 9 or 10 games. Even with all, because look at how many close games Green Bay lost. You know, does the Seattle game swing the other way? Green Bay had a lead in that game. You know, does the Minnesota game, do they just win that game outright? Does the Chicago game swing the other way? They lost that game by 7 points. How many one-score wins? Does the Rams game flip coming off a bye? How many of those close losses flip, or in the case of week two, the tie, by just having Khalil Mack on the field, and not just having Khalil Mack on the field, but having him instead of Nick Perry, or instead of Clay Matthews, or instead of Reggie Gilbert? That difference, that gap, is enormous. It's enormous. And you know, that gap for the Bears, pretty big. It's not like if you just took Khalil Mack off, they would be a historically great defense. They wouldn't. They'd be a very good defense. And we saw it in the games that Khalil Mack missed. The rest of the defense was not able to pick up the slack. You know, Eddie Jackson was a really good player 2 years ago without Khalil Mack. Kyle Fuller wasn't. And Danny Trevathan wasn't. And Prince Amukamara wasn't. They were solid players. They were not Pro Bowl players. Akeem Hicks was really good, but he was made better by the fact that teams had to think twice about double-teaming him because they had to double-team Khalil Mack. He changed everything for them. And obviously he would have made the Packers better, but now it seems clear. We've got reporting from another team involved in the trade that they were not ever really able to get into the mix. And now the Packers president, whose relationships with these teams is on the line when he puts things on the record, saying Oakland zeroed in on Chicago for this reason. I think at this point, that's enough evidence. That is corroborating evidence for the reports. And we have to now take that as this is our working understanding of what happened. It might not make you feel better or worse about what happened, but I think this has to be now how we just understand everything that went on with Green Bay. They were never really in it. And if you have problems being in it, that's where BlueChew.com comes in. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. And this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants a little extra function in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor visits, no waiting at the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, blue like the color blue. Promo code LOCKEDON to try it free. All right, let's get to Andy Herman. You can follow him on Twitter at Scani Sports. He started the Pack-A-Day podcast. He also breaks down the film. He's a film grinder at Cheesehead TV. You're probably already following him on Twitter, so you know who he is. You know what he does. Andy, thanks for coming back on Locked On Packers, a return appearance for you.
Yeah, thanks so much as always for having me. Always love talking Packers, especially with you here on our rival podcast. But no, this is fantastic. Thanks as always for having me.
I was on a podcast the other day, the Freezer podcast, and they brought up Locked On Packers and Pack-A-Day, and I feigned ignorance. I was like, I don't know who Andy Herman is, and I don't know what that podcast
Never
is.
Never heard of him. No idea what that is. Must be new.
All right, Andy, in all seriousness, or at least as serious as we need to be here, an interesting conversation started between us on Twitter, and frankly, you know, as interesting as we can be possibly, which is, you know, not a high bar for us, unfortunately, but was this idea of upgrades. And when you sort of laid it all out there, the different players that Green Bay replaced and the quality of the players that they're putting in those positions. Now, you used your grading system, which you have readily admitted is your grading system.
Yep.
There are other grading systems out there. I think you have to trust who you're going to trust. And obviously, I trust you enough to have you on the show. So, you know, when you're going through and looking at these spots, I mean, some of these are really startling, and you start to think, okay, they were 6-9-1 last year. That's really 7-9, given the stupid Vikings call. There's a potential that if Matt LaFleur is not a disaster, there are a lot of upgrades on this team. They should be a lot better.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think you bring up a great point. You know, every grading system is going to be a little bit different, and everything's going to be in the eye of the beholder. And if you get, you know, five people who know football in a room and they each grade something, it's probably all going to come out a little bit different. So I completely agree with you there. I think the thing for me is that you're just looking at specific trends. You're looking at specific players. I kind of feel in a way like I might be onto something, because all the players that I really graded negatively are gone from the team. And I think that really gets us to the point where we are looking to see some of these upgrades. So you take a look at some of the players that graded far in the negative for me last year. I mean, four of the top ones were Kentrell Bryce, Clinton Dix, Clay Matthews, and Nick Perry. So all four are gone, and in their stead, in their place, are, first at edge rusher, of course, we know the key players here, Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, and at safety, Darnell Savage and Adrian Amos. And one of the things that I really wanted to go back and do is take a look at a lot of these new players. Now, Savage and Gary, it's really tough, at least for me, to get all 22 film, which is, you know, limits me to what I can see on tape of them and how to grade them. But the other three players, the free agents that they picked up on defense, I can easily go out and do. And when I went out and I watched Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, and Adrian Amos, I graded all three quite easily in the positive. Amos a +6, Za'Darius +5.9, and Preston Smith +2, which means that they're putting a lot more positives on tape, a lot more good plays, big plays on tape than they are negative plays, which is obviously what you want to see. And it was just a night and day difference between the players that they're replacing. And the skeptic or the cynic might say, well, now that you know they're Packers, you're grading them higher. And you know, there's probably always a bias there, but it's not that, you know, like Nick Perry and Clay Matthews and Clinton Dix and Kentrell Bryce weren't Packers when I was grading them either. So I was hoping that they were doing well and wanting them to do well also. So a strict apples to apples comparison, these are four major upgrades for Green Bay.
Well, and you look at pass rush in particular, outside linebacker for the Packers, that's a premium position. And so it's not just that they're replacing some guys. It's not just that they're saying, oh, okay, well, wide receiver 3 is now a lot better. This is not the Bears upgrading to Taylor Gabriel. This is premier frontline positions, and you're taking players that were really bad, not really bad, but that were actually bad last year, and replacing them with players that are actually good. Sometimes I think we underrate the value of just having good, steady, quality players in a position. It doesn't always have to be Von Miller, or it doesn't always have to be Earl Thomas, right? I mean, when you look at the difference in these grades, Kentrell Bryce, you know, the difference between Kentrell Bryce and Adrian Amos is probably how you would have graded a really good Earl Thomas season.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally true. If you're going from a guy who is solid to great, that's probably a plus 10 differential. If you're going from a guy that's really bad to really solid, really good, that's a plus 10 differential. It's a massive, massive swing. And I think there's two ways that you can kind of build defenses. I think you can kind of survive with, you know, some really big playmakers. And I look back at the Packers last Super Bowl, and they had some major playmakers on that team, right? You had your Charles Woodsons, your Clay Matthews, you had your, you know, Tremont Williams was fantastic. Nick Collins, we all know the main players there. But you also had some Frank Zombos and some Howard Greens and some Charlie Peppers on that team that weren't quite so great. And you were just hoping that they were going to kind of hold up their end of the bargain enough so that all those playmakers and those studs could go make their plays. And then every once in a while, you'll hear, you know, the term a no-name defense. It's a defense that just gels together. It's got the right coordinator with the right pieces that they need. They've usually got great depth, and it may not be one or two Von Millers or Khalil Macks or Reggie White or, you know, Clay Matthews, whoever you want to name. It's just a group of 11 guys and maybe 13 or 14 guys with some of the sub packages that just know how to play defense. And it goes a little bit to you're only as good as your weakest link. And if you have guys all over the place where you don't have one specific guy that you can attack, there is great, great value in that. And I think that's a little bit of what they're trying to attack. And it's not to say that they don't have playmakers, because I think they've got some really, really big names, especially, you know, you get your Kenny Clarks. If Mike Daniels can bounce back, I think Zadarius is going to be a big time player on this team, Jaire Alexander. So they've got some of those guys, but I think this is going to be a little bit of that. They just don't have the weaknesses. They've got good players all around the defense.
And to your point, you know, Zadarius Smith and Preston Smith don't have to be 15 sack guys. They just have to be not minus players. And this is what really speaks to that. The case that you're laying out here. Can you just, you know, without, you don't have to go into great detail, but when you talk about grades and you talk about these numbers plus and minus, what are they representing for you?
Yeah, so on every single play, so for those who don't know, I grade every single play throughout the course of the season, and I did the same thing with the you know, free agents that have come in this offseason. And basically, every single play can be anywhere from a plus two to a minus two. Now, a plus two is, you know, literally a game-changing play where you probably won the game on that individual play, and it was an insane effort. And a negative two would be, you know, your Brandon Bostic, you know, onside kick situation. So that's the most and least points you can get on a specific play. The vast, vast, vast majority of plays are plus 0.1 to a minus 0.1. Somewhere in there, it's pretty neutral. You're not going to get, you know, any major swings. It's building up points throughout the course of a game for little things that you're doing well. If you're not making major mistakes, if you're not making major plays, it's going to be little, you know, little movements back and forth with a huge chunk of players ending up around net neutral the majority of the time. But when you see some of these big pluses, when you see some of these big minuses, what it tells you is that either they were, you know, making huge plays or giving up huge plays, or they consistently played really, really well or consistently played very, very poorly. And that's kind of what the grading system is set up to do. So, you know, about the biggest player that I've had grade through a season is about a plus 20. The worst is about a negative 15. So it kind of gives you some of those, you know, boundaries just to give you a little bit more of an idea. But that's kind of the general gist of the grading. And I think the thing that I enjoy about it is it's one consistent set of eyes that's looking at it over the course of at least now two seasons. This will be my third season doing it this year. So at least hopefully you have some consistency there with at least one grader looking at it every week.
Yeah. You know, all of this being subjective, we don't know. The QB tier thing just came out. Mike Sando's piece that he does every year. Those coaches and personnel people see the same players differently. This is just the nature of it. So, you know, those kinds of discussions I think can sometimes be a little bit overrated. It's what I find troublesome is when people are not transparent about it. And there can be issues like that. I'm not speaking about you. I'm speaking about a big company that does this a lot.
No, neither here nor there on that. I think that's a really good point. And the thing that I've always wanted to say to people is, and kind of what I referenced at the beginning, I don't expect my grades to be the be all end all. Just because I say somebody played poorly, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily a bad player. If I said somebody played great, it doesn't mean that maybe they didn't make some mistakes. And I think you have to be aware of the blind spots too. So I don't always know the play call. Now, if you watch the play and you see what all 11 guys are doing, you can, on the majority of plays, tell what the scheme was and what they were trying to accomplish on a specific play. But it's not perfect. And there are times where I know somebody messed up, And I just don't know who it was. It could have been a couple different players. And I'm not grading somebody negatively because I think I know who it is. If I don't know for sure, or at least with a pretty good feeling, I'm not going to grade that player negatively. So there's gaps in it. You have to be aware of those gaps. But I do think, again, if you took anyone that's watched football for any period of time, and you just took a player and you watched him every single snap over a course of the season, I think most people would be able to glean whether that player was playing pretty well or pretty poorly. And there's always going to be a deviation there. There's always going to be room for error. But I definitely think some of those things can have value. And I think that's why it's important to look at it. And one of the things I always do, that big company that you named earlier, I always go back and I look at some of my grades at the end of the year in comparison to those. And, you know, when I had graded HaHa Clinton Dix poorly throughout the first half of last season, and the season before that, Pro Football Focus had him as their second rated safety. I wanted to go during the bye week last year, I went and I looked at every play for HaHa Clinton Dix again, because I wanted to see, is there something I'm missing? Is there something I'm biased against? What am I missing? And I went back and I did a huge article and I posted basically everything I saw. And the crux of that article was, hey, you judge for yourself. Maybe I'm not seeing something correctly. And I definitely stood by the grade that I had. And I think that's kind of why he's no longer in town. But there's definitely a piece of that. And I think that's why they're valued at seeing different people's grades on things.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're only consuming once, and this I don't mean to disparage Pro Football Focus, because I think there are some smart people there. I think they do a lot of really important, really good work.
For sure.
And I wish we had more places that were doing charting so that we could have a more complete view of what these players are and what they're doing. But there was one tweet that you had that stood out to me in particular, because you went back and, you know, when you took the grades from the players that the Packers signed, you re-ranked what the defense would have looked like, or the grades that you had and who the best players on the defense would have been. And to me, it was pretty startling to see what the top five looked like.
Yeah, and I think the startling point is obviously that two of those players would have been the players that were incoming. So it would have been Kenny Clark, Mike Daniels, Jaire Alexander, Adrian Amos, and Za'Darius Smith would have been the five. And I think that's accurate. And I don't think that there's too much of a hot take right there. And, the thing about Adrian Amos, when I went back and I watched him, of course, the negative on Adrian is that he hasn't made some of those huge splash plays. And just knowing how I grade, if you would have told me, you know, and he had at least three or four pretty bad plays last year. He had two plays against Miami where he gave up huge touchdowns because he failed to wrap up and make a tackle on a play. And in a way, they kind of lost the game because of those two big plays against a team that they should not have lost against. And then in the playoff game,
no one on the Bears could tackle that game, in fairness.
That's true.
They were 100% horrible as a tackling defense that game.
That's very true. It was so uncharacteristic of him and that team as a whole. It was just a really weird game. And then, in the playoff game, he had a touchdown against Goddard, which was a perfect route, perfect throw. He had a penalty that kind of led to a touchdown later in the drive, which was just him being aggressive. It was his first one like that all season long. But he had some plays that really cost them. And if you'd have told me he had those and didn't really make up with it for some really big plays, I would have said he's probably a -5 to -8 type player, but he was so consistent in everything that he did besides those two games and those four plays in particular, that he just graded well almost on every single play throughout the course of a game. And that really added up throughout the course of a season. So really enjoyable player to watch. He needs to, hopefully gain some more of those splash plays. He puts himself in the right spot so many times that I think just by dumb luck and happenstance, it's going to hopefully regress to the mean, and he's due for just some lucky bounces his way, if nothing else. And then I think, again, same thing with Za'Darius Smith. He consistently puts himself in a situation to win. He's got an explosive first step. He really uses his hands well. He needs to develop a counter and kind of a move off of his first move if it doesn't succeed, but a high motor player. And I think both of these players are going to be top five players on this defense going into next season.
Yeah, I think you can make the case that Preston Smith and Adrian Amos are both guys who are and have been to this point in their career anyway. Remember, they're both, I think just 26. They have been, sort of a half step slow making plays. Preston Smith has been a half step short of making a sack a ton. I mean, his pressure numbers speak for themselves. He gets pressure at a rate that is, commensurate with some of the top guys in the league, but doesn't have the sack numbers to back it up. I wanted to ask you specifically about Amos, because I went back and I watched the first four games of the year, and then I had also watched the playoff game. And I'm watching the tape going, where are the plays he was supposed to make that he didn't?
Yeah.
To me, it seemed like part of it was usage. It was like, okay, this was a robber coverage. He had to come all the way from deep and make a play underneath. He got there just as the ball was arriving and made a sure tackle. What was he supposed to do that he didn't do on that play? That was what I was wondering. If you, as the season went on, if you felt like he was leaving splash plays on the table.
No, not at all. And that was the thing up until that point, especially in that Miami game where there were a couple of missed tackles. And then even up to that point after that, I was legitimately wondering, because of course, all we've heard from, you know, some of the louder Bears fans is that this is a player that wasn't very good, and he wasn't going to make big plays for you and things like that. And, you know, we're used to seeing safeties that give up some pretty big plays from time to time. And the most outstanding thing to me about Adrian Amos is you're 100% correct. Outside of a couple really rare plays for him here and there, he's in a situation that he's supposed to be. He's doing everything that he's supposed to do, and there's just no real air. And there's nothing that he could have done more. There's not like there were a bunch of interceptions hitting him in the hands and he was dropping them. You have to remember, this is a team, and I think Bears fans, and in my mentions at least, and I think in yours as well, love to point out that Adrian Amos was made because of Eddie Jackson. And listen, if you're playing next to Eddie Jackson, yes, your job as a safety is going to be easier unequivocally. But that goes both ways. The reason that Eddie Jackson is able to fly around to the football, come up and do everything that he's able to do and take gambles and take risks from time to time is because they have an incredibly steady player who they knew was going to be everywhere that they wanted him to be at all times and wasn't going to give up big plays. That allowed Eddie Jackson to go be the playmaker. Now they've got a guy in HaHa Clinton Dix who is that risk reward player. He's probably going to make a few plays too, but he's not going to be that steady, safe player that they want to be able to back up Eddie Jackson so that he can go do everything that he's great at doing. So I think this is a major addition for Green Bay. I think he's going to team incredibly well with Darnell Savage. I think he could be a really great mentor for Darnell Savage as well if it works out that way. And I think the Bears really lost a player that I think they're going to really miss going into next season.
It's going to be interesting to see. The worst case scenario for our mentions, Andy, is HaHa Clinton Dix coming up with a big play in week one that cost the Packers the game. We may have to quit Twitter if that happens. Let my listeners know, if they don't already know, where they can find all the work that you do, including the Pack-A-Day podcast.
Yeah, you can always find us on the Pack-A-Day podcast 365 days a year. I'm usually on Mondays, but you can definitely listen to us all year long, and we've got a ton of great hosts and a lot of great guests. Peter, you've been on. You were phenomenal as well. So we'll have to definitely get you back on here in the near future, and you can always find my writing on Cheesehead TV as well.
Some of us do shows 4 or 5 days a week, Andy. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, see, I don't know if you realize this, Peter, but the way to really win in this industry and be successful is let other people that are better than you, do the work for you, and they get to shine. And in all seriousness, I think a really cool thing about the team is that they're all so phenomenal, and we're just a team, and everyone's working together. So, but I respect the hell. I can't imagine doing it 4 days a week. That would be quite the undertaking. So I kudos to you.
Well, it often feels like a Sisyphean feat because you just keep pushing the rock up and then it tumbling back down. But I appreciate that, Andy, that you guys are awesome over there. Would love to get back on once the season gets rolling or before, whatever you guys want. I'm available, and I'm sure most of my listeners are already aware of that and probably already listening. If you're not, go check it out, but make sure you're subscribed and rated this podcast first. Just that'd be great. Andy, I appreciate you coming back on Locked On Packers. We'll do it again soon.
Can't wait. Thanks so much, Peter. Have a good one.
All right, I want to thank Andy again for joining the podcast. Always great work, and he is thorough. Again, the grades, your mileage may vary on the grades thing. And Pro Football Focus, God knows I have had issues with their grades in the past. I've had issues with the transparency. I've had issues with the consistency. Andy does the work. He puts in the work. And his eyes are his eyes. So you go back and you look at the last 2 years. It's the same guy grading all of the players. And so, whatever biases he may have, and we all have them, they seep into everything we do. At least he can be consistent about it, because it's just him, and we know it's him. We know what the criteria are. He's transparent about that. So I think what I have always said about grades is they are most useful on the margins. Whether a player is really good or really bad should be easily discerned in these kinds of things. And I think when you look at, you know, what he is putting out there in terms of the grades of these players, they jive with what I see. And that's why I trust him. That's why I have him on. I mean, we're going to disagree on some stuff, of course. And not just because we have a faux professional rivalry. It's just the nature of the beast. So I hope you enjoyed that. I enjoyed that. And, you know, I think there's, like I said, a lot to be excited about what the upgrades will mean for this team moving forward. We run a little long today. I apologize for that. I try to be understanding of your time in the offseason. So we'll be back two more times this week. Training camp opens in just 2 days. The players are getting here. They're arriving. They're going to have a lot to say. We're going to hear from them very soon. So reacting to that and figuring out where to go from here. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LockedOnPackers. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can leave a review, a 5-star rating, preferably. And anytime you want to hit us up on the Locked On Packers fan hotline, you can do that, 920-341-3775, to always stay Locked On Packers.